Hey, brave one. Welcome to another episode of the Aware and Prepared podcast. I'm your host, Mandy Pratt, a trained domestic violence victim advocate, self-defense teacher, and professional speaker who helps those feeling vulnerable learn emotional self-defense and how to be street smart. You deserve to live in peace and safety. Stick around to hear safety tips that will help us enjoy empowered lives. Let's leave worry behind so we can be savvy, aware, and prepared. Welcome back to the Aware and Prepared podcast. Today is part two with Dr. Manny Tao, a clinical and forensic psychologist, a certified threat manager. We are picking back up the conversation from last week where he was sharing with us about the Isla Vista massacre killer who was Elliot Rodger. So we're talking about the psychology behind all of that. So let's dig right in. What should we be looking for? And also, it makes me curious, like, didn't somebody notice something about him and say something, or how does that work?
Actually, people did. His therapist called the parents and they were on the way up. And actually, I had the fortune of hearing Elliot Rodger's mother, Tin Rodger, speak twice in keynotes. And just bless her heart, bless her soul. What she's going through was so traumatizing, but yet she's trying to champion, hey, please, look, here's the warning signs. And and she also has a daughter who's going through all of this too. What, how is that to be the sibling of a mass shooter?
Right.
You know, that's just so tough. Right. But yeah, so some of the things to look for. So when you see these lists of, these are the warning signs, of school-place violence, workplace violence, domestic violence. They're a loner, doesn't play well with others. They're not accountable for their behavior. They project blame on others. Unusual interest in dark topics like, you know, mass shooters or weapons and stuff. That kind of list, although at face value looks really good, is utterly worthless in reality because it captures way too many nonviolent people in the general population.
Yeah, right.
It sounds good. And plus, static lists do not do well with dynamic people, right?
Mm-hmm.
Our behaviors are very dynamic. Static lists are just they just don't.
Good point.
So how do we tell the difference between bark versus bite? How do we tell the difference between those who make threats versus those who pose to be a threat? Well, what I've seen, and this is something I developed back in quite a few years ago and actually formalized in 2009. And actually this model I'm going to talk about is being implemented in the San Diego Superior Courts now when they refer out for threat assessments, that you need to address these three things. There are three clusters of behaviors that I've seen over and over again. I've been doing this since 1996.
Mm-hmm.
I actually started in 1994, but I got my license in 96. So I said, that's my official start date. I lost count of how many cases. I must have done between 500 or 1,000 cases that I actually invoiced for, and plenty of cases that I don't. I just do kind of pro bono work. But what I've seen over and over again are three clusters of behaviors from people who have a threat potential for targeted violence. Number one, a narrowing of focus upon a target. That's pretty straightforward. Number two, ramping up of malicious behaviors. And then number three, leakage of their obsessions, of their mouth. And so that ends up becoming the foundation of a model I just call threat assessment for targeted violence. I'm not an academic. I don't care if it sounds good or not. It just needs to work, right? Because it needs to be simple. I work with a lot of law enforcement agencies and I train them up on this.
Mm-hmm.
So those three behaviors turn into these three areas. We look for threat posturing and or preparatory behaviors and or rehearsal fantasies of targeted violence. Threat posturing is a communicated threat. They could be direct or indirect threats, right? A direct threat, I'm going to hurt you. An indirect threat, you better watch your back. They could be physical, nonverbal, close proximity behaviors like encroaching in someone's personal space, malicious glaring, mad dogging, if you will. But the core question becomes, in this day and age with our vitriolic culture, if you will, all nastiness on social media,
right,
how do we tell the difference between smack talk and an emerging credible threat? Well, the threshold is this, when there's increasing specificity in targeting methodology.
Got it.
The difference between, Rick, you torque me off, I just shoot you in the head. That could be a cringeworthy, comment depending on the context. But if I say, Rick, you're torqued me off, I can just shoot you in the head. And by the way, I know where you live and you better watch it back this weekend. Mm. That increased specificity targeting methodology, that now becomes an emerging credible threat. Yeah. So it's your posture. The second thing we look for is preparatory behaviors of targeted violence. Preparatory behaviors involves the investment of time and resources into malicious act. They're researching online how to build a bomb. Like what we saw with, was it Tamerlan and Jacques Sarnaev, the Boston Marathon bombers. After that whole incident that occurred, the search went up when it comes to, you know, how to build a pressure cooker bomb.
That's great.
Amazon was selling all sorts of pressure cookers, which is just unfortunate, et cetera. But preparatory behaviors also involves scraping, harvesting media, information off of social media for you to exploit, to leverage. Preparatory behaviors also involves, you know, procuring supplies, weapons, you know, whether it's ammunition, all that kind of stuff. Preparatory behaviors is a concern because it's fairly easy to think and talk about violence, but now you're doing something about violence.
Right. Taking action.
You escalate from aspirational to operational.
Mm-hmm.
And then rehearsal fantasies, the third thing. Rehearsal fantasies to target violence involves those obsessions and fixations involving malice. Their personalities are consumed with the stuff. Oftentimes, you see these people as people who have experienced narcissistic injury, it cut deep. And they're injustice collectors, and they have a thing against, they're very misanthropic, right? They're against all of humanity because they're not getting what they think they deserve, mm-hmm. et cetera. In these rehearsal fantasies, we often see leakage, which is social media postings, right? Leakage was a term defined by Mary Ellen O'Toole, retired FBI. She defined it as my operational definition is telegraphing your malintent to other people, typically on social media, of what you're going to do, you know, that kind of stuff.
Right.
We also often see legacy tokens and manifestos, especially in this day and age. The bad actors want you to know exactly why they're doing what they're doing.
Right.
You need to fix the wrongs of society. With rehearsal fantasies, we're really concerned because fixations can escalate. Can it be exacerbated to identification? Again, when you call a man a horse once, he ignores you. You call a man a horse 100 times, he gets irritated with you. But if you call a man horse 1,000 times, he starts thinking about buying himself a saddle. When you're posting, like back to Elliot Rodger, 137 pages, all these videos, you can't let it go. It becomes a part of you. And as a result, we have people just having these initially dark interests that are very binge-worthy compared to their peers. And then it escalates to what I call static dark fixations. They start having fantasy insertions and personalizations. Let's say if they were studying Columbine and they start to show incongruent affect, they start talking about joyfully, which is really cringeworthy to the peers. Then it escalates to, well, I could have done it better, right? This fantasy version, you know, I could have done it better. I could have done more. You know, it's that static dark fixation. Then that escalates to active malicious fixations. Well, I am going to do better.
Mm-hmm.
Static dark fixation means I wish bad things to happen to you. Active malicious fixations involves I'm going to do bad things to you. And it's a very short bridge to cross. Mm-hmm. And the bridge basically is a grievance. Mm-hmm. I've had cases where people have these static dark fixations, studying all these different actors, shooters, studying all body counts and stuff. But they were studying very cringeworthy and required, you know, monitoring. They didn't have a specific grievance. And they didn't have any, at least that we know of, any action imperative to do something about it. But the people who do have an action imperative to do something about it, that's because they have a specific grievance. Typically, let's say with students, it's upon a very clique of kids, right?
Mm-hmm.
With the adults in domestic violence, it's a very specific grievance towards the, you know, intimate partner, those kind of things. Or right. In the workplace, grievances towards HR or, you know, to the disciplinary actions or to the coworkers who are bullying, intimidating, mm-hmm. et cetera, and stuff.
Right.
So we also see with the younger ones, college age, I call cosplay, costume playing or costuming, where they're dressing up and emulating like pseudo commandos, bad actors and stuff. Cho, who perpetrated Virginia Tech, dressed up with all his, you know, tactical vests, gloves, hat, glasses, guns, and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
We had some other people emulate the same thing. The first instance that we took notice was in Columbine with the black trench coat.
Right. And
there's been other people who kind of emulated these dresses where they're certain masks with skulls on them that emulated, you know, some extreme domestic terrorists, those kind of things. And unfortunately, we have a lot of those rehearsal fantasy type behaviors on social media.
Mm.
I was fixated on purple shoes. And in my neighborhood, I might not find anyone who's fixated on purple shoes, but I go online. I'm sure I could find some community, right? And right. then go down these really weird rabbit holes, et cetera. So I become reinforced. Well, when it comes to these dark topics of mass shootings, incels, whatever grievance, yes, there's someone for everyone, unfortunately.
So it's easy for them to find each other and then kind of...
Absolutely. And then it becomes a very, very delusional and dark echo chamber. So someone has poor boundaries or have it within themselves to actually do something about it. That's mm-hmm. majority of people might have issues. They might, you know, gamble a little bit, dabble in kinky sex, play with illicit substances, but they don't become drug addicts, sex addicts, gambling addicts. With a small subpopulation of people who have thinner skin, weaker dispositions, severe character flaws, personality disorders, severe mental health disturbances, those are the ones that go down that rabbit hole to become the, you know, the addicts or the shooters and those kinds of things that we're so concerned about. Back to that framework of threat assessment targeted violence, threat posturing, preparatory behavior, rehearsal fantasies. The presence of any one of those says talk to someone. We're concerned. And then the most common is just threat posturing, you know, so we'll try to figure out, is this just smack talk or is it a sign right. of something deeper? Right. A combination of any of those two, we have an issue. You need to talk to someone right away. Boy, if all you get all three hits,
right.
you need to talk to someone like yesterday, et cetera. And the goal of that particular model is like a triage to see, is there anything there? And then if there is, let's now do a deeper dive using other different frameworks and other different type of assessment or investigative tools, right? Looking at collateral information, looking at evidence, doing interviews of the subject, the person of concern, which I always like doing because you get a lot of great information that way.
So. Right. So if we happen to notice that and we're like, okay, this is way more serious than I was thinking, do we go to the police? And then like, what happens if the police check them out and they seem like they're okay? Like, what if this person is super charming and good at it?
So let's say, when someone says, I'm afraid, I'm scared. If you talk in the language, if you talk in generalized language, well, he's looking kind of creepy. He's staring at me. Not very actionable. We're talking more personality conflict level stuff. And you're not going to get much from law enforcement unless someone looks like they have a severe mental disturbance. They might do a health and welfare check. Mm-hmm. But if you talk in language of threat posturing, preparatory behaviors, rehearsal fantasies, they listen. Because now you're becoming very concise with the language that they cannot ignore, such as, yeah, he's looking at me in a threatening manner. I also noticed that there's been some, you know, noises coming out of his garage. I heard something about, you know, some, what I thought was a gunshot. I don't know if there's an actual discharge or something, whatever, or that he's been posting online all of these nasty things and he's been talking about how he's been researching, whatever. If you break down not your opinions, but behaviors that fall in the realm of threat posturing, preparatory behaviors, and or rehearsal fantasies, at minimum, they'll do an incident report. Mm-hmm. If they end up doing a knock and talk and he's, let's say, you know, sociopath, he's superficially charming, there's nothing they can do, which is often the case because unless they're about to do something or doing something, their hands are tied.
Right.
Then there's nothing they can do, but you have an incident report. Now, there's also, if it's in a workplace setting, you can contact HR about your concerns. And if it triggers various, you know, concerns in HR, they may contact someone like myself, a threat assessment professional, and come in and take a deeper look at what's going on because there might be a public safety issue along with a workplace safety issue. Mm-hmm. If you're in the school place, you've got various people the students can go to. Actually, there's all sorts of hotlines and tips. Like I know in San Diego County, for instance, the Law Enforcement Coordination Center and also the FBI, they have websites where you can put in a tip, anonymous tip when it comes to possible school place violence or any other kind of violence. And then it gets funneled out to various people and they go ahead and do a follow-up.
I'm going to put those in the show notes so people know where to find those. I'll look them up.
Thank you. And then again, kids can go to a senior resource officer. They can go to their assistant principal. They could talk to the school counselor, even to the nurse if they want. But as a general civilian that's not having access to HR or school, your only access is going to be through local law enforcement. Or if they feel that they need some backup, they could talk to people like myself. They could find various threat assessment professionals that can maybe help with directing and guiding them on where to go with this, or maybe giving that person a voice. or providing a report, et cetera. There's an organization that I belong to. It's a premier organization for threat assessment professionals, and it's called the Association of Threat Assessment Professionals. And the website is at atapworldwide.org, O-R-G, ATAP, okay. A-T-A-P. And they also provide what they call certified threat manager certification. And it's just a very high level certification that says, yes, you've looked at the standards when it comes to law, ethics, evidentiary stuff, different tools out there, different approaches and how to interface, you know, with the public sector, private sector, how to deal with law enforcement, how to deal with schools, how to deal with, you know, et cetera, all sorts of people. And so they can actually go into ATAP and say, hey, is there a threat assessment professional that's local in my area, in my county, and you might be able to get some referrals.
Got it. Okay. And I'm thinking too, I know that one of the listeners had shared with me that she had somebody at work who's not there anymore, but they called him the creepy guy because he just seemed creepy. And he actually made a comment at one of their meetings that he might come back and shoot people up at the office there. But he retired, and that was a year ago. And she shared that nobody ever told HR that or anything because they were afraid to like poke the bear, you know, like what if the guy finds out and then will he come shoot me? Like, how do we handle that?
So HR cannot deal with things they don't know anything about. So this is, that's the problem there. And there's a common myth. We see it also in domestic violence. Boy, if I do something, get a restraining order, it's going to make it worse. Actually, no, it's already worse. He's doing it whenever he feels like doing it. You might as well start controlling the situation and having him respond to your test, put guardrails and to intervene. And so it should have contacted HR. HR, most a typical scenario is employee is scared. They contact a supervisor. Supervisor contacts HR. HR takes a look initially what's going on to see if there's something there. Okay, there is something there. But then go ahead and put the employee on administrative leave with pay. Not a disciplinary action. It's just a pause because we don't know if there's a safety issue. There's right. Now complaints of safety issues. We don't know for sure. So let's put a pause, which is totally legit from a labor employment perspective, because California's very employee friendly with their, you know, laws and regulations. Then they start doing an investigation, like a sexual harassment investigation. Interview the, you know, the complainants, what's going on. Take a look at any other, you know, evidence. Look at the personnel file. And if it rises to a level of either A, it's over their head, or they're feeling uncomfortable, someone like me gets contacted, an external resource. I come in and do my things, then do my threat assessment. And then depending on the outcome, he comes back to work, doesn't come back to work. We could talk about that in a little bit. If HR was aware of this and they did not do anything, then that becomes a huge risk management issue for the organization. Because now they move, and I'm not an attorney, I'll always defer to legal counsel. But now they're moving in, if they know about it and do anything, now they're looking at, you know, differential treatment, lack of due diligence, negligent intervention, negligent retention, all those risk management issues where you knew about it and you didn't do anything. It's a public safety issue. You can get dinged. We saw examples of that in the private sector, if you will, recently, right? I think a couple of years ago, there was a lawsuit, the parents of a student victim against TAC High School, where there was that shooting, and they won the lawsuit. TAF then files for an appeal, and they lose the appeal. And the appellate judge puts out a 47-page opinion, which basically says that you, school district, failed to transfer information to one another, number one. Also, he attributed percentages of who was accountable, in which the parent was attributed a large percentage for accountability. Mm-hmm. And then just in the past couple of weeks, Ethan Crumley, who perpetrated, it was Parkland mm-hmm. mass shooting, parents were charged and convicted. Yeah. And both parents got 10 to 15 years each because there were a lot of things they could have done prior to getting to that point. And so there is culpability if you know and didn't do anything about it.
Right.
Like, not even culpability, there's actually no accountability for that.
Wow. Yeah.
I used to a lot of stuff at you, a lot of terms of art. I know this is my world. So, you know, we use a lot of terms of art and quite frankly, when we're working cases, a lot of it is, you know, immediately, you know, focused. And so Sometimes, oftentimes we're able to be very concise and succinct to what's going on and move away from the emotionality. So when we talk about threat assessments, when I perform a threat assessment, I try to accomplish three things. Number one, to assess for the immediacy and severity of a threat potential for target violence. Let's make sure everyone's safe. Number two, develop a behavioral profile of the person of concern. You know, let's put this in context. Are they immature, say, knucklehead stuff? Or are they really mean-spirited and history of, you know, vindictive attitudes and poor anger management with physical tantrums, you know, that kind of stuff. Then from the behavioral profile, third, I want to see if I can identify behavioral trajectories. Where is he or she going with this? Mm-hmm. In threat management, we really don't want to be catching up to a threat. At minimum, we want to be on top of a threat, but ideally we want to be ahead of the threat. And to be ahead of a threat, you have to get a sense of the trajectory and then be able to, you know, place assets and resources in the right places to keep a person off that pathway of targeted violence. And I'm on a whole different path.
Right. Yeah. All right. Dr. Tao was so kind to spend over an hour with me that this is part two. We have one last little bit, part three next week. And this is the key because I asked him, how do we stop, you know, this increase in targeted violence here? So he has some really great things to say with us next week. So stay tuned to make sure that you're following the show. All right. So lessons learned today were number one, there's a cluster of three behaviors in threat assessment for targeted violence. Narrowing of focus on a target. Wrapping up of malicious behavior. Leakage of obsessions via words. Number two, three areas these behaviors manifest in are threat posturing, preparatory behaviors, and rehearsal fantasies. Number three, threats can be direct, quote, I'm going to hurt you, or indirect, quote, you better watch your back. Number four, indicators of a credible threat are increased specificity in targeting, investment of time and resources, and rehearsal fantasies, increasing obsessions. Number five, the importance of using specific language when reporting to authorities to garner the correct attention, right? So instead of, hey, this creepy neighbor seems like he's up to no good, right? You want to give specifics like, I thought I heard a gunshot from the garage the other day and he always glares at me like he wants to kill me, right? So we can give specifics. Next lesson, suggestions for anonymous reporting were given. There are hotlines with the local police or the FBI, and I'm going to share those in the show notes. And then next lesson, where we learned the reporting options for different settings. In a school, a student can share with a senior resource officer, an assistant principal, a counselor, maybe even a nurse. In the workplace, we share with HR. In domestic violence, we can call a hotline or the shelter or the police. Next is the utilization of resources like the Association of Threat Assessment Professionals for Assistance. I'll share that link in the show notes. Next lesson, not seeking help due to the fear of retaliation can worsen the situation. The situation is already a problem and people are already not safe. So we see something, we say something. Lastly, the objectives of a threat assessment is to assess the immediacy, the severity, and then to develop a behavioral profile of this person. And lastly, to identify behavioral trajectories to prevent violence. Thanks for being a fan of the Aware and Prepared podcast. Show it some love by leaving a review. And don't forget to hit follow so you can catch future episodes. To book me to speak and transform your audience, go to my website, awareandprepared.life, L-I-F-E. To join my VIPs who get each episode's lessons learned, resource links, and more sent directly to you, sign up is also at my website, where you'll find a free gift when you do. The link is in the show notes. I'll talk with you next week. Remember, you are worthy of a safe and peaceful life.